This is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ SSD, on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. This week's special episode here, I've been going to the open mic nights, trying to do stand-up comedy, you know, trying to get the word out any way I can about multinational corporations and how screwed up they are. So I try to slip a lot of that into my routine. And one of the comedians here, one of the local comedians here in Eugene, Alan Tyson, I wrangled him into doing an interview with Eugene POW Wrestling. So he's talked to Mr. Ooh La La and Bubba and Jeremy Belcher of Eugene POW Wrestling. So that's what you're going to hear here on KEPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. Just one little comment, you know. There was this episode of Cheers where they asked Norm, the guy that drinks beer at the end of the bar, they asked Norm what his life philosophy was. And he said, find something you love and don't let anything stop you from doing it. His love was beer, of course, but me, I used to work grocery, and I worked this 3 to midnight shift, partly to give the guys that had a family, they could work the 8 to 5s and get home to see their family, but mainly because I couldn't get up, hated getting up early in the morning, still do. But they always knew, every time I'd call in sick, the next day they would ask me how was the show, because they knew, no, because I couldn't get anybody to take that 3 to midnight shift for me, so I'd just call in sick. So they'd just say, well, so how was the show? Because they knew that anytime progressive rock, jazz fusion came to town, I was going to call in sick and go see them. So yeah, Norm of Cheers. So that's what these people are doing. That's what POW Wrestling is about. People that found something they love and are going out and doing it. So that's what we try to bring you here on KEPW Community Radio. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support Community Radio.
I'm sitting here. Hello and welcome. Thank you. I'm sitting here with Mr. Ooh La La, Bubba Blanchard, and Jeremy Blanchard of PAL Pro Wrestling. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
Bonjour.
It's an exciting time for pro wrestling, wrestling fans and PAL Pro Wrestling as an organization, is it not?
It is, yeah. We have 2 big shows coming up this month. There's Let It Rain at World Pies on June 17th. And then a week later, we have Baseball at PK Park right after the Ems game. So that's exciting to be more infused into the local cultural lexicon, for sure.
Yeah, that's really cool. How did you get that with the Ems game? That's really interesting.
They reached out to us, I think, right?
They called us.
Really?
They're looking to do some promotional stuff to increase attendance, and really to pay off their fans for being such great fans.
Yeah.
Because they have such a great fan base that now that they try to organize things, Major League Ball clubs will do, you know, fireworks shows, and I'm pretty sure Emeralds do as well, but the reality is that they want to do nice things for their great fans, and this is one of the nice things that they're doing for their great fans.
Right.
Is they're providing an opportunity for, you know, entertainment after the game, if you will.
Yeah.
And so they called us because pro wrestling and baseball, it's like peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Everybody likes it.
Yeah, I was thinking about the other night, and it's such a great marriage.
Absolutely.
Know? So I'm excited for y'all to go. To be picking that up, I'm excited to go myself.
It's going to be an amazing opportunity for fans to see, you know, 2 great baseball teams play and then a group of great athletes perform professional wrestling.
Yeah.
So.
Ms. Rilala, PAL got its start in 2019, correct?
Correct.
What goes into starting an organization like this?
Well, at the beginning, it's just kind of amassing resources and doing a lot of paperwork.
Yeah.
Either buying a ring new or finding one. We knew somebody with a ring, getting all the paperwork, you know.
It's like Malcolm X once said, actually. He said in his famous speech, you can't drink alcohol without breaking a government seal. You can't gamble without breaking a government seal. You can't smoke cigarettes without breaking a government seal. You can't have professional wrestling without breaking a government seal. You gotta get your licensing together. You gotta have a voter's license. You gotta have your shit together. Is that okay?
Yeah, we can bleep that out.
I'm sorry. You just gotta have your business sense together. And so yeah, we dot all the I's, cross all the T's with the government officials. And being in this industry for as long as we've been in this industry,
right.
You know, access to the ring and the talent we already had, per se.
Well, so that's good.
Once we dot all the I's, cross all the T's with the government officials and all the documentations and everything's legal and print and proper,
mm-hmm.
And we're the one of the most professional independent outfits anywhere that you'll ever find.
So. Yeah. 2019, that was right before the pandemic, correct?
Yeah, we ran four shows, October, November, January, and March.
How difficult was that for y'all?
I mean, as difficult as it was for everybody, I guess. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, everybody went through really horrible times at that time. Everybody's life, I think, was so harshly affected that the fact that we started a wrestling company and then, you know, 4 months later, it was shut down because of the pandemic, obviously it was no worse than what other people went through.
Right.
Yeah, it was almost kind of like a prologue, you know? It was like a dry run. Now that I look back on it, you're just kind of going through the motions, figure out what works, figure out what it takes to set up and promote. And
those were our first four shows, again, as POW Pro Wrestling. Because, again, we have done many other things in this industry, you know, over the last 20 years, if you will.
Right.
And so at that point in time, it was a good sense for us to go out, throw these four shows, and then be able to get everything better for everybody, for the talent on the card, for the city, for every, you know, for the, I mean, the crowd that's coming. It was better for everybody that we were able to get those four shows, knock off some cobwebs, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and then have an opportunity to present the product even better.
Yeah.
So.
And people were chomping at the bit when we came back, so we've drawn better after than we did before.
And I wasn't wrestling on the first four shows. I was dealing with some injuries.
Okay.
So the fact I wasn't on the show is definitely going to affect attendance.
Right.
But now that I'm back on the shows with my brother, Jeremy Blanchard, the attendance has really been, there's been a boom, if you will, for Power Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the only other kind of experience that I could pull from that would even relate to that is I tried to start doing a showcase down in Florida right as the pandemic started. And
comedy showcase?
Yes. Yeah. And the logistical nightmare that it was to run that comedy show.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I could only imagine what it would be like for a wrestling show. What was it like?
I thought maybe, though, with those Floridians, that there might have been I guess I would say that it would have been easier for you to try to do something for us here in Oregon.
Yes.
With the restrictions we had in Oregon, because I don't think that Florida had the same, but again, I wasn't in Florida, so.
Well, Florida started out very lax, for sure, but it soon had to tighten up its belt because of the general age of most of the residences.
And that's when you got hit with the belt. When they tighten that belt, they hit you with it.
Yeah.
Okay, yep, there it is.
But for us it was, hey, everyone has to wear a mask. You know, well, what's it like for a wrestling organization where you're gonna have two people in direct contact with each other and an audience?
Well, that's just kind of a thing where enter at your own risk. I mean, you know, well, the first few shows we had, they were masked at Matt Court. That was the rule of
the university's policy was everybody on the campus.
But the performers were not masked.
Yeah.
Yeah. That wouldn't work.
The same guys as the same guys the other professional sports. Yeah. The Lucha Gulo, Sonico, of course he's masked, he's Lucha. But the people in attendance wearing the masks and the athletes, just like in the other professional sports, like the NBA and the NFL and stuff like that, they didn't have to wear masks.
Yeah.
You know, because they were the athletes, they were performing. Again, the NBA was in the bubble there in Florida, and you know, the guys in the court didn't have to wear the masks because of they were athletes performing and yada. So
did you all take like added precautions, as in similar to every wrestler has to get COVID tested before the show?
We followed all federal and state guidelines. Yeah. Being at the University of Oregon at the time, which mm-hmm. was the venues we were using, we followed all federal and state guidelines. We checked everybody's cards. We did the due diligence on everything.
That's great.
Which again points to the fact, like I said before, that Palpro Wrestling's one of the most professional independent wrestling organizations there are in all of America.
Y'all started out using university venues.
Mm-hmm.
When did you make the leap to more to like Blair Alley and World Pies?
That was July. The U of O thing was just kind of, I mean, it was a nice venue, but parking over there sucks.
Mm-hmm.
We ran all sorts of student deals, and the students just either weren't aware of us or didn't care. I don't know, probably 50% of one, half dozen of the other. And then we got the offer from Blair Alley, so we went over there and really, I feel like Blair Alley is kind of where we found ourselves.
Yeah, you know? It's about finding your niche in anything, you know. To Mister's point about the university, it was great to be affiliated with such a great place, the University of Oregon, and be at a venue like that, because in a way it gives you instant credibility mm-hmm. that you are professional because you're on the University of Oregon's campus.
Right.
Now, as everybody knows, there are problems with parking at the University of Oregon. There's not a university around, that's not the situation.
Right.
And we drew really good crowds, and the people came and supported us. But again, it's about finding your niche. And when you find a group of people who are like-minded like you, and again, the Blair Alley gave us that opportunity. They were the first bar to come to us and say, hey, we want to run the show. We ran a show for them. It was wildly successful. They were very happy. We were very happy. And then we had this wonderful opportunity to go to World Pie Arenas. And
it's definitely when we started seeing a change in crowd.
Yeah.
To me, the crowd changed, more female attention.
Okay.
It used to be where it was male dominated. I'm not going to lie to you. In the switch from here on out, I've seen a lot more of a mixture. It's been nice. A lot of kids now with the World Pie.
Oh, so you're starting to see a younger audience too.
Well, we had that.
Yeah,
we had that. Okay. And Blair, unfortunately, Blair Alley's just 21 and over. So for a while there, some of the younger fans were getting cut off. Mm-hmm. And I know that was part. So we got a really good relationship right now.
Yeah, if you look at the television ratings for cable television and for live television, there's a demographic amongst the female audience,
mm-hmm.
That everybody tries to, garner attention from.
Yeah.
And to Jeremy's point, we've been blessed, that we have that demographic of the female audience that everyone's looking for. Well, they're coming to our shows and they're having a great time. And they're coming to them for the first time. The reactions we're getting as people are leaving the building, at the last show, I had a group of three young ladies come up to me, and they're like, this was the most amazing thing we've ever been to live.
Yeah.
And we would have never come to something like this. But our friend was like, hey, dude, we should go check this out because I heard good things. And they're like, oh my gosh, whatever. And then boom, they came to it. And on their way out, they were just like, you guys, this was just amazing.
Yeah.
And so we've been blessed, and they got that demographic too, to Jeremy's point. And so we have this, and you look out in our crowds and it's just so amazing.
It's a mix.
Every different walk of life, everybody, it's like all the good people in the world are coming together for some great entertainment.
From Elmer to Elvira.
Absolutely. So that's what I'm saying. All walks of life, everybody is coming out and just, having a great time.
Maybe they just realized it was a male soap opera.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What's better than that?
And that's great. Like, that's wonderful. I'm so happy that there is an organization that is showing people how incredible wrestling is as a medium.
You cannot find right now, if you were to do your research, you will not find another professional wrestling organization per se. Most other people are doing wrestling entertainment.
Yeah.
They're doing something that's not pro wrestling that Jeremy and I grew up with,
mm-hmm.
and that the people that trained us, those people that trained us, there's professional wrestling, there's a way you approach wrestling, and there's a way you present professional wrestling.
Right.
And we present, I believe, professional wrestling in that context.
Yeah.
And there's a major market out there for it. And we're just now starting to tap that market.
That's actually leads me to one of my next questions. I've noticed that as an organization, PAL has a very hard-hitting style of wrestling. It's very stiff. Is that something that y'all searched out as an organization, or was it something that kind of happened?
No, I don't think so.
For instance, Jeremy, give me five people we've trained with, trainers of ours. Did we train with like Playboy Buddy Rose?
Yes.
Colonel De Beers?
Yes.
Roddy Piper?
Yes. Grappler.
The Grappler.
Brian Cox.
Bruiser Brian
Michael
Cox.
Michael Modest.
Michael Modest. I mean,
we've already gone past that.
The Big Ugly.
Yeah.
Okay? We're at seven right now, and it doesn't really even stop there.
Yeah.
But these are people that we have the privilege to get inside a professional wrestling ring with and work with for hours and hours on end. And we've taken that concept of professional wrestling. It's a professional sport.
Yeah.
It's the only professional sport that runs year-round.
Yeah.
There's good guys and there's bad guys. You cheer for the good guys, you boo the bad guys. It's a real simple formula, basically. Mm-hmm. And in that simplicity, you have a situation like coming up here where Jeremy and Bubba Blanchard want to be the first ever PAL Pro Wrestling Tag Team Champions.
Yeah.
And the Hammer Brothers are standing in our way.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we have four individuals with a personal problem with each other.
Right.
We have a disagreement. And how are we going to settle this disagreement?
It's not necessarily a disagreement. It's the fact that I ain't going to have the, they're not going to win anything. But you and I ain't going to win anything. Huh?
You have a story.
Yeah, that's
a story that can be told.
For me, you know, just creatively speaking, it's like a lot of the wrestling you see on the independent level, technically it's pro wrestling. But it's also more, it's just like an exhibition of moves. It's not really building towards
anything.
That's
what I'm saying. It's
dazzling to watch when you're sitting there, but it's like a piece of chewing gum that runs out of its flavor really quick. You know
what
I mean? It's
just entertainment. Right.
Whereas everybody has a direction that they're going towards. Everybody knows where they're headed. Everybody knows what, you know, issue is at hand. Whereas a lot of these other organizations in the area and around the country, they'll just try and pop with like the biggest matches possible, but they don't have a relation to the show before or the show after. Those people might not be there next month, they might not have been there the previous month. It's just like, wow, here's wrestler A that's hot on the independent scene versus somebody that's either like a hot local or somebody from AEW you're waving a lot
personal.
Of money at.
Well, and everything's personal.
Yeah, and for example, like the organization that I was most familiar with before I moved up here was Fest Wrestling. I was based in Gainesville, and I went to a few of their shows. And I'm not going to talk bad about anybody, but they do a very different style of wrestling down there. And for somebody who... one of the wrestlers my dad introduced me to really young was Dusty Rhodes, who, for somebody who grew up watching that style of wrestling, it was just worlds apart from what I was used to. So I guess it's just very comforting.
There you go. Well, that helps too, and a lot of it is what you grew up on.
Right.
If it's your hometown, that's who you're used to seeing. That's your wrestling. That's your style of wrestling. Well, the wrestling business is very competitive in different areas, different ways. I should say different areas, but different ways. And you said like the hard-hitting side of we seek anybody out. No, but a lot of times it's competitive, and you see two guys like us going in the ring and really laying into somebody. You tend to want to do the same thing yourself, or you might look a little, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe
I'll cut out that foo-foo stuff. Yeah.
Three-step crazy thing. It looks pretty, but it doesn't
wrestling.
Have a lot of impact.
Right. That's wrestling entertainment. That's wrestling entertainment. Again, like Olaf said. That's just like, hey, look at these flashy moves. Look at the trampoline cowboys. Ooh. Okay, that's wrestling entertainment. Pro wrestling, it's personal. It's personal between the Blanchards and the Hammer Brothers. We're the Blanchard Brothers. And now these two idiots come running around here trying to be brothers? I don't understand how they even thought they could get away with that. The brother gimmick is with the Blanchard Brothers. This is ridiculous. We're real brothers. They're probably not even real brothers.
I'd like to see their worship.
It's personal.
The Cook brothers came into PAL and they saw the Blanchard brothers and said, we're not even going to be a team
anymore.
They don't exist anymore.
The bricks.
The Massaro family, Vinny Massaro, Bubba and Jeremy Blanchard, we cannot stand Funny Bone. He's a filthy piece of trash. But we don't argue that Funny Bone's one of the most talented athletes in all of professional wrestling. Because if he wasn't one of the most talented athletes in all professional wrestling, he wouldn't be in PAL Pro Wrestling. Because again, it's pro wrestling, and we want professional wrestlers, and they come in, and like Roddy Piper looked at Jeremy and I when we were doing Portland Wrestling Uncut, and he said, let me tell you something. All of those fans are on top of you. You make sure everybody knows that pro wrestling is real. I can't make you believe everything's real, but damn it, I can make everybody knows that Jeremy and Bubba Blanchard are real. And that's why we always get the reaction we get. All over the United States, wherever we've been, everybody gets a reaction from the Blanchards because they know we're real.
Yeah.
You believe it, so they believe it.
Yeah.
Bingo.
This is real. This is our livelihood. It's how we make money. It's how we feed our families.
When you take a back bump, you're landing on fucking wood and a little thin mat.
And personally, I think that's something that has been missing from a lot of wrestling, even on the bigger organizations.
Absolutely. You know? The bigger organizations are, you know, you have a publicly traded company in the WWE.
It's worse. Let's just face facts. They don't do any wrestling. It's a lot of talking.
It's wrestling entertainment.
It's the Fast and the Furious, and we're like a Scorsese movie.
Bingo.
Yeah.
That's a good way.
That's an excellent way to put it.
They're Fast and Furious. We're a Scorsese movie for sure. Because, again, they have 5 hours of programming a week, and they have less than 30 minutes of wrestling in 5 hours.
That's unheard of for me. I didn't say unheard of because it's happening right now, but it's absurd, I should have said.
How long are your shows on average?
It's 2 hours, 45 with an intermission.
2:45?
Yeah, 2 hours with a 15 intermission.
Yeah. Here's something that has always fascinated me from kind of a managerial level. How do you, because PAL has a wide variety of talent within its local, group.
In the Northwest,
yeah. How do you put a spotlight on that incredibly diverse cast within the 245?
You just have to pick your pod, essentially, and be like, okay, these are the... Generally, we like to use the same people every month because it allows the fans to invest in them, want to buy t-shirts, blah, blah, blah. You said you're going to go with somebody. If it doesn't work out... Like, okay, who's somebody else that's out there that can fit this role that maybe worked out better or has a better attitude? Or, you know, every once in a while, somebody just runs their course.
Yeah,
you know,
or you watch them come step up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Next thing you know, they put themselves there. You have the competition level again, like we're saying, you compete in different ways.
Right.
It's not, and one of that's like, hey, I want to, not necessarily, you build for the show, right? But you also want to make your mark in that show.
Right.
And you keep doing that. You start climbing up, and then you start, you know, you show them that, hey, I'm worthy. And you start seeing people do that. It's kind of a neat thing to watch.
The structure of the show is, this. I would imagine, similar to you as a comedian. Like, I'm a big George Carlin mark.
Mm-hmm.
And so George Carlin, in the hour special on HBO, he takes you on a wide variety of subjects, if you will.
Right.
So he starts with this kind of subject, you know, then so as he breaks down the subjects, the show gets broken down, if you will. The booking of the show is as follows, too, to Jeremy's point. Earlier in the show, it's talent that's trying to get over to get to the top of the show.
Right.
You know, and so it's just like any other professional sport where in football, the guy who's second string center, he's trying to get in the game. He's trying to get some reps, and he needs some reps. And then he gets his reps. So these guys on the lower end of the card, they're getting their reps, and in their reps, they're proving that they're stars. And then they move up the card, and then they get to the main level. Okay. But that's the nice thing about pro wrestling, as opposed to some of the other sports, is, you know, the whole thing is dynamic from the beginning to the end.
Right.
And you don't necessarily, in a way, have to worry about the new rookie that just got drafted from Tennessee. And watch him go through his growing pains, and before he becomes a great football player, he's got to go. By the time they get in a PAL professional wrestling ring, they're already a great athlete, and they're already good enough to be in that ring.
And sometimes they really rise to the occasion. I mean, we have our top acts are a year, less than a year in. Amira, Fleming Aces, Hammer Brothers, you know.
Yeah.
And we just gave them their little spot, and they proved that they belong there, so. And then you have people that have been wrestling for 10 years that are standing at our door with their hat in their hand. It's like, thanks, but no thanks.
Right, yeah.
Because, you know, various reasons. They don't fit. We have somebody that we like better that fits their, you know, is
not everybody
the same thing they're doing.
Role.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some promotions that have 40 people on the card. And I get it. You know, some promotions just want to be a steward for the business and give as many people chance to get in there as they can, but to me it kind of dilutes it a little bit.
We're selling personal issues at PAL Pro Wrestling.
Yeah.
We want personal issues with people, we want conflict, and we want to settle those conflicts with professional wrestling matches.
Right. So how long have y'all been wrestling?
Since 1997.
So 20 plus years.
Yeah.
What inspired you to get into it? Like, what was like that aha moment for you?
Oh,
first time you saw Lawler take a strap down?
Probably.
First time seeing Lawler?
Nah, well, you gotta understand, like, every kid has a dream of doing it. Yeah. And then most kids, either you fizzle out at 13 or you don't.
Yeah.
And then at one point, you're either a fan or you want to get in the business.
Right.
That's just, I don't think there's any other way around it. It's just the way it goes with this, with wrestling.
Yeah.
And for us, I never, ever considered myself a fan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of professional wrestling. But I didn't consider myself. I don't know if that makes any sense. It's going to sound weird.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't. I knew what I was going to do. Like, yeah. I mean, I knew what I was going to from age 6 to 7 years. I'm not kidding you not. We went to the Mid South Coliseum, very young age. Watched Memphis Wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I got hooked. And we moved here to the Northwest when I was very young. Okay. I am an Oregonian. I mean, I've been here since I was 5, 6. But my dad's parents lived in Tennessee, and we'd go back to Memphis every summer.
Right.
I didn't find out Portland Wrestling until later, because Memphis Wrestling is on at 11 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Every Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got to Oregon, we remember my dad turning it on Saturday morning, and there was nothing.
Oh, no.
So we're like, what? Didn't realize that it's at 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
Or 10 o'clock at night. I can't remember exactly which one. I think it was at 11.
11.
And so that was a little too late for a 7-year-old to 8-year-old to watch. So
yeah.
It wasn't until later that I got into, like, Portland wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
But, from a very early age, I knew I wanted to do it. So I can't tell you exactly when, but... Yeah.
Were there any major differences going from, like, the Memphis style wrestling? Like, did you notice any, like, major differences in the wrestling style?
Yeah, absolutely. Memphis is punch away, brother.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And up there, they didn't hardly any of that. Maybe on their comeback.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like the whole freaking match they were punching each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hey, you watch Bill Dundee and Jerry Lawler, sometimes that's all they did. Like,
yeah.
And they found creative ways to, like, keep punching each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, that's the thing that I loved about the Southern style wrestling, is it's very brawler.
Right. And that's my style. That's our style.
Yeah.
I haven't changed my style. I brought it here. Like, and I didn't even, like, bring it. It was just instinctively.
Yeah.
That was the style. And when that chance to come, for me to do offense, for me to throw some offense in,
mm-hmm.
that came out. And I punch away, man, I'm telling you. Like, I don't do it as much as I used to, but I used to punch away.
I watched your 3-on-2 match with
Vinny against Flex.
And God, by the end of that match, y'all are just tearing.
Yeah,
just
yeah, and then you better believe it. All three of those guys, and I'm saying, call myself guys in third person.
Yeah,
but all three of us can hit.
Yeah,
I mean it's fun. I enjoy it that way.
Yeah,
we're a lot like Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Yeah.
We're slow to start, and we don't wake up till we got hit real good.
Right. What about you, Bubba? What was like your?
When my big brother said, we're going to wrestling school.
That's pretty much it, yeah.
And I was like, hey, dude, I don't know if I have enough money right now. He sold his car. We went to wrestling school. And,
Headed to California.
And headed to California. Okay. Had Michael Modest,
APW.
Frank Murdoch, Donovan Morgan. Was that it?
Morgan and
Vinny Massaro.
Vinny Massaro. For sure, Vinny needs a lot of credit.
The school you see on Beyond the Mat, you know, that Roland.
Robert Thompson.
Guy. Oh, okay.
Robert Thompson was part of that school. Yeah.
Yeah, Jeremy and I showed up there. We took a couple bumps and Modest.
They thought we were the Golden Goose.
Modest loved us immediately. Yeah. Frank Murdoch was extremely harsh to everybody. He was very gruff in a good way. But he was very gruff. He was really nice to us immediately.
He let me stay in his. He had his own personal. They had dorm rooms up there at APW's garage, and he had his own personal one because he built those.
Oh, okay.
And he gave me his room.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it had the only one that had a ceiling fan. Trust me, I loved that room.
We'd puke in the calisthenics, and then we just keep fighting, and then we'd bump our fucking ass. I'm sorry, we bump really good, and. And so, yeah, everybody fell in love with us. And then Mike approached us, Modest, and he said, do you guys realize that if you went back to Oregon, you could work right now? And so...
Well, it was the thing where with we didn't realize that APW, how much of a business it was, and that he what his game plan was for you to he would charge you $7,000 and then hope that you didn't pay. like get, yeah. get as much money out of you, but hope right. you know, because like Big Ugly, put it this way, Big Ugly went through the training school four times, the beginner class four times.
Oh, I see.
Because he owed them money.
Right.
So when we were living at the school, Michael Modest was just like, hey, listen, you're not going to get in the ring for, because we had to work these piddly jobs, but they expected us to actually work the shows mm-hmm. and break down the ring and work security. But right. but you know, you get in trouble with your shoot job.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then pay rent at the school. It was just, they had a really good monopoly. Don't get me wrong. If I was a businessman, I'd be on the same model. Because people were doing it.
Thinking,
I mean, in new beginners camp, 50 kids.
Yeah.
That's $7,000 a pop. And some people were paying straight up. Like, but those are the guys you'd see in the ring automatically. So right. it wasn't, so to me, it wasn't how it should be.
So the person running the school was a piece of trash. And so it was like one of the biggest human pieces of trash that I've ever met. And so I got out of there because he was a fat, greasy,
it was
slimy,
he was
despicable
was
human being. Yeah. Just, there's, I mean, she's pathetic. And so I got out of there and I came back to Oregon. He hung out a little bit longer down there.
Yeah, I tried to stick it out. But...
And then he moved to Memphis and wrestled.
Yep.
In Memphis, and then came back to Oregon and was working with Bruiser Brian Cox, who was getting ready to launch a new Portland wrestling with the Kafouris.
Yeah. Called Total Chaos.
So I finished up my training with Bruiser Brian and Jeremy. They finished me off the rest of my training. And then...
It wasn't until Tito. It wasn't until Tito's.
Yeah, the Kafouri thing dismantled.
Like every promotion.
Yeah.
Like, I should say every promotion. In the early or late 90s, early 2000s.
A lot of
promotions. It was up. And, I mean, it was Alphabet Soup in Memphis.
Right.
It was different. I mean, RCW, DBW, blah, blah, blah. Stuff that didn't even make sense. TAJJ. What is that?
That's catchy.
Yeah, right? And then, yeah, they were up and down, but one of the things that was consistent was Tito was out in Hillsborough, and Tito was an old-time wrestler.
Tito Corleone, the Latino heart.
And he has a lot to do with our training, too. So, he said, then, we can keep going, but I don't want to bore people, but he's another one that is very instrumental.
That's us. And he's the one who gives me my name.
Yeah, okay.
Bubba. So, that's where it was like, hey,
gotcha.
You're Bubba. And so, he gave me the Bubba name. So, we had the Latino heart throughout Tito Corleone. Was polishing us up, shining us up.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we just took off.
Hit the ground running.
Yeah, after that. Yeah. After Tito, we were just, we were in like Flynn.
And belts mean nothing, but if it tells you something, the first match we were ever in, we won the Pacific Northwest Tag Team titles.
What about you, mister? Where did your start in wrestling come from?
Well, I mean, I was a fan of it when I was a kid. I never really wanted to be a wrestler that bad. I always wanted to be the promoter. I always wanted to be like the person putting the shows on, I guess you would say.
Mm-hmm.
So, first wrestling I ever saw was George Steele against Randy Savage on Saturday Night's Main Event.
Oh, that's a great match.
Well, the match itself isn't that good, but the visual of it is great.
The visual of it is lovely.
Because you had this muscly dude in sequins who's the villain hiding behind a woman. And then there's a slobbering, hairy beast of a man who's the hero. And it just totally threw out all these preconceived notions of what a man is, what a hero is, what a villain is, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's really what initially fascinated me with it. And then I first met Jay when I was 13. I went with a friend, and his dad was a pastor, and hooked up with... Met Jay. I was the person that told him that Kerry Von Erich had committed suicide a couple of months earlier.
Yeah,
and so
that's right.
That blew his mind, and he started calling me Shivani.
Well, he's this 13-year-old kid that was an encyclopedia of professional wrestling, so it was easy. Yeah, it was just, we just sat there and talked for hours on the bus.
So we would talk about putting on wrestling shows at the church and stuff, and then I kind of got away from the church thing, and he did too, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And, Then well, somebody he trained, Garrett Fertig, G-Shock, who's done some announcing for us. I was on this local radio show called The Donkey Show, and he hit me up, and he'd seen my Jerry Springer appearance, and he's like, man, you know, you like wrestling, you'd be great at this. And so I started doing camera work, and then I got a tryout on a student show as a manager, and then from there on, I just kind of weaseled my way up the hierarchy of DOA, the promotion that I worked for then. I was helping the booker, I was writing the programs, I was running the social media, I was producing the YouTube show. So a lot of it was just initiative, I guess, more than anything, you know? And doing stuff that other people were either unwilling or unable to do,
yeah.
You know?
It's pretty much how you break into the business.
Yeah.
It's called paying your dues. If you don't do it, it'll find you. And sounds, things won't go well.
Sounds like working in a restaurant.
Yeah. Any work, it's like anything.
Any kind of work, yeah. Even in comedy, you have your paying your dues.
Respect what you're doing,
yeah.
Enjoy what you're doing, and respect the people that came before you, and things should work out for you.
Yeah. Well, fellas, I think we're coming up to the end of this. We're a little bit past the 30-minute mark.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and shout out that show one last time. And
so we have Pal Pro Wrestling Let It Rain, Saturday, June 17th at World Pies, just right downtown. Free parking the block away at the Parkade. Kids are $10. Limited front row seats still available. And then a week after that, June 24th, Base Brawl at PK Park right after the Eugene Emeralds and Vancouver Canadiens games. And tickets start at $10. The wrestling will be right after the ball game. So probably the ball game starts at 5, so I guess the wrestling will start sometime between 7:30 and 8. Hopefully it will have cooled off by then.
Anything y'all want to say before we go?
Thank you, said it all.
All right.
Thank you for your time.
Cool. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks, thank you.
Well, I've been Alan Tyson. That's been Mr. Ooh-La-La, Bubba, and Jeremy.
I'm waving like people can see me.
And the Blanchards. And y'all have been lovely. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
This is KBW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. You've been listening to Alan Tyson, local comedian Alan Tyson, talking to Mr. Ooh-La-La and Bubba and Jeremy Belcher of a local wrestling organization called POW, recorded at the Blair Alley here in Eugene. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.